Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, being in the hospital can be scary enough. Facing a serious diagnosis can be stress-inducing enough. But what do you do when you, you disagree with the course of treatment and family members or the patient and the doctors aren't on the same page?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. We know it's happened before, but now we've got a pretty high profile case coming out of Minnesota. This is the family where their daughter, 18 years old, Christmas Day, fell in the bathroom and had to be rushed to the hospital. And here's what happened.
On Christmas Day, a blood vessel burst inside her brain. She had emergency surgery at the Mayo Clinic. Doctors gave her a 2% chance of surviving. After a month, she moved to the rehabilitation unit at Mayo with new doctors.
The family had to fight to get their daughter taken to the Mayo Clinic, a world-renowned facility. And they say, you know, they credit the surgeons for saving their daughter's life. 2%
chance.
She beat the odds, a miracle.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. But it was when they moved into the rehab facility where there started to be some differences. Parents were trying to be the best advocate they could for their daughter, were questioning a lot of the treatment that was being done. And that's where they started to get into some disputes. They asked to have the daughter taken to another hospital.
Okay. Did you want out of the Mayo Clinic?
As bad as possible, yes.
But what happened next is alarming. Alyssa and her parents say Mayo wouldn't let her go.
Did you ask to have her transferred to another hospital?
We did.
And what did Mayo say?
They said no.
A lawyer even wrote this letter asking for an expedited transfer to another hospital.
It felt like you went from a healing place to a prison.
So here's what I don't fully understand. Why would a hospital want to hold on to a patient who, A, doesn't want to be there, B, has lawyers involved trying to get you out? What is their motivation to holding you against your will inside a hospital?
I don't know what the motivation is, but there are a lot of...
I didn't mean you had an answer.
Medical experts have taken a look at this case in particular, and this is the exception, not the norm, and hence the reason why we're talking about it. But they were surprised. These medical experts had studied these things going at how the situation escalated and how it was allowed to get to this point, a point where the parents hatched a plan to break her out of the hospital.
So Alyssa's parents hatched an escape plan. They pulled a trick on the staff to get her out of Mayo, and they documented it on video. They told them that Alyssa's grandma, Betty, had come to visit but was too frail to come inside the hospital, and so Alyssa had to come to her. But when they arrive at the car, there's no Grandma Betty.
Come on, babe.
It's Alyssa's mother. Watch as a nurse's aide grabs Alyssa's arm.
Yes, she is. She signed out. Come on, honey, we're going home.
They then called the police. There were three different agencies
involved. The hospital calls the police.
Yeah, because they're saying, like, her life is in jeopardy. Yeah. She's not cognitively, she has cognitive impairment. And, you know, they're now putting their daughter's life at risk where, you know, if that's the case, then, yeah, you should have the authorities involved. But when they finally make their way, they being the parents, to another hospital, the doctors there have a dramatically different take on her condition. They say she is cognitively aware. She can make decisions for her health. In fact, she doesn't need to be in the hospital at all. They wrote her a prescription, told her to follow up with her primary care doctor, and sent her home.
Really?
I think one of the things that was most shocking to me about this entire situation was while this young lady was in the hospital at Mayo, and parents were, you know, getting into tiffs with the nurses and the doctors, this was going on. Mayo tried to get emergency guardianship over the girl.
Months later, Alyssa and her family learned a secret while looking at police records. Just before Alyssa escaped, a Mayo social worker had tried to get court orders for emergency guardianship for Alyssa. A county official told police that the Mayo Clinic was concerned for the medical decisions being made for Alyssa.
I've never heard of this level. I've heard of patient and doctor disputes. We've heard the stories of, you know, a differing of opinion of what course of action to take. Some of these, you know, should you pull the plug or not pull? Yeah, we've heard all this stuff. The yin and the yang, the back and the forth. I've never heard of a hospital going to these lengths to try to keep a patient from their family.
You know, I'm not a doctor.
Or other doctors.
But the thing is like, as a parent, and again, I put myself into the shoes of this family and the parents that were trying to do what's best by their daughter, it's a tough place to be because I'm no medical expert. I don't know if what they are doing for my daughter is the right thing. So the level of confidence you have in order to break your daughter out of this hospital, potentially putting her health and her well-being on the line, is a huge decision to be had. But
Agreed.
There had to be something going on here that scared these parents so much that they thought that this was their only option. And it's one of those things where, you got to trust the doctors. But at what point in time, when you ask to be transferred to another hospital and they tell you no?
Right. I'm like, that's a thing.
What are you supposed to do then? You're not saying
just let me walk out the front door and
let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument. Is that in the best interest?
That's irresponsible.
Exactly. But you're saying, no, I just want to go to a different hospital.
I
want to go to
guys.
Different doctors. This is not right. This relationship is not working out, for God's sake. We're breaking up. I want to leave. And they say, over our dead body. Which, granted, might be your dead body that before they let you leave. It strikes me that, listen, we already know that it's difficult to question doctors.
Yes.
It's already difficult to say, the doc says, well, here's what it is, and you go, horse hockey. I mean, what are you basing this on? They're a doctor, they have medical school, they have experience. You're basing it on whatever you saw
Anecdotal,
on WebMD.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I can acknowledge that there's that difference. So who's on your side when it comes to this? Who can you rely on when it comes to these decisions?
It's so difficult because I know that there are others out there that probably have gone through a similar experience as myself where, you know, I had a doctor that told me, you know, hey, you should do this or you need to do this.
Okay.
And I said, okay, you're the doctor. I need to do this. And then I find out like 8 months or so later, okay, that's really hurting me. And that wasn't the best advice. And I probably should have researched this a little bit more. And so I made some changes.
The next time
a doctor told me, you need to do this, I said, well, why? Well, because this is our first course of treatment. I said, okay, am I going to die if I don't do this?
Right.
And literally, the doctor looked at me and goes, what do you mean? Are you going to die? I'm like, am I going to die? Well, this is what we do to treat it. You're treating the symptoms. You're not treating the cause. Am I going to die? Because I didn't want to be on a medication.
Mm.
And he was like floored.
That somebody would push back like that?
So I took the script that he wanted me to take. I went, I researched a bunch of things, talked to a bunch of doctors. You know what I was told? You don't need that.
But how many people are going through that? Again, we've put doctors on a pedestal, and in some ways, rightfully so. How many people are going to question their doctor, surgeon, whatever, to that level?
But you know
Challenge
what?
Challenge them.
The only reason why I now do is because one time, I didn't.
Yeah.
And I paid the price.
Okay.
So for me, I have learned from my mistakes. I wasn't always like this. All right. I have family members that think I'm nuts because take the word of
the
doctor.
Just gospel. Yeah.
Like in any essence, I mean, like in any industry, Bruce, you as a former PD of a radio station are going to say, hey, you know what? This is what this morning show should do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They want to get their ratings up. This is what this morning show should do. You go to a PD in another market, they take a listen to that same radio show and they go, no, they should do this. You go to another one, they go, no, they should do this. There's a lot of different opinions.
Yeah.
Now, I realize that
subjective medicine
is more scientific, but there's also a lot of opinions.
There's a lot of subjectivity.
As
and when
to
you talk
what
to
you
doctors
do.
And you talk to surgeons, it is not A plus B equals C in the medical world all the time.
Wish it was.
And different because there is an art that goes along with the science, and different doctors can have completely different opinions.
Just as in this case, you had the doctors at the Mayo Clinic saying that, you know, she needed to be in there for this rehabilitation. She had cognitive impairment and couldn't make her own decisions. She had to stay here for treatment. Parents sprung her, got to another hospital. The hospital goes, she's more than capable of making her own decisions. She doesn't need any more rehabilitation. She doesn't need to be in the hospital.
It's like, again, I get back to, there's something up, the motivation behind the original hospital to not let them go and to secretly even try to petition for custody.
Emergency guardianship.
That is just bizarre. Just bizarre. Hoping it never happens to you. I hope you never have to see the inside of a hospital, for goodness sakes.
There we go.
The state of California has some very, very serious wildfires, and they have a tactic, one that we have here as well. But it's got some people questioning, should inmates be fighting forest fire?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
We know that wildland fire can be devastating, that we've had some of these fires. I don't need to remind you how deadly they can be in the state of Arizona. Right now, California dealing with some. The Mendocino fire now has burned over 300,000 acres. They are working on different levels of containment, if you will. But these were multiple fires, and they kind of burned together, making this massive fire. Houses have been lost, structures. Obviously, all of the forestry that's gone down, and there have been some loss of life in this as well.
And so you have so many firefighters that are now battling them all across the region. And in California, well, they also have some inmates who are battling them.
In addition to roughly 7,000 full-time and seasonal California firefighters, the state relies on about 3,500 prisoners, including many women, to battle the blazes. The California Department of Corrections tweeted last week that at least 2,000 prisoners are currently fighting the wildfires burning across the state, including 58 youth offenders.
Okay, so these inmates, they're volunteers, so they have the choice as to whether or not this is something that they want to do. And if they so choose to do it, they have to fit some criteria. They can't be a violent offender. They cannot have committed arson, rape, sex, right, have a sex offense, anything along those lines.
Okay.
So,
These are. I use the term, and you know, I've watched too many of those like inside prison shows. These are some more of the trusted inmates. They've earned privileges.
So the privileges, you get to get out and go do this, potentially learn a new skill, and you get paid.
Okay.
$1 an hour.
Whoa.
And some people are saying that these inmates are being exploited because they only make $1 an hour.
Yeah.
And others are saying, well, you know what? They're learning a skill, and they're also using their hands and their mind. They're busy, and they're contributing to like the greater good on the wildfire. So why not give them a chance?
Okay.
We asked you on the open mic line, 602-200-2733. California paying inmates $1 an hour to fight wildfires, a good idea, or are they being exploited? Here's what you said across the valley.
This is Patrick from Mesa, and I used to be a wildfire fighter while incarcerated. And you do get to some hairy situations and to have fellow inmates flown out in a helicopter to the hospital, but it's well worth $1 an hour. Definitely hard work.
Wow. Okay, so he did it while he was incarcerated. All right.
He did that.
Hey, my name is Justin. I'm out of the Globe area. Got a lot of friends who are now full-time firefighters, if not end up getting onto hotshot crews because they ended up getting certifications while they were prisoners. Fighting fires in California, Arizona, there's a lot to it, and I am definitely for it.
Yeah, Jim Cross mentioned to me in the hallway because he heard we were talking about this and said that you've heard before in prisons where people might learn a skill.
Yeah.
That being a firefighter is a learned skill, and that some of the inmates in the state of Arizona look forward to being a part of these programs because it is a skill that they can use when they do get out.
Now, that's the thing.
I had a question.
To learn a skill.
And Adam made a point on the Twitter, and here's where I'm ignorant on this. Show of hands. Is the fact that they may have a felony conviction, though, stop them from getting other firefighting jobs? Obviously, maybe not all firefighting jobs, but are they learning a skill that they're limited in using in the real world? I don't know if a wildland firefighting might be different than a Phoenix firefighter.
Fair enough.
I don't know that.
You're right. I don't know either. But in any regard, learning a skill, getting into a situation where you are developing, isn't that a good thing for inmates? So the chance of recidivism, you know, goes down.
Listen, I'm not saying I'm not going to end up in prison, but I've never been there so far. I would think, and maybe this is my, again, this fantasy world that all prison is like TV shows. Wouldn't you want to get out of your cell? Wouldn't you want to get out of the rec room or whatever? Wouldn't, even though you are fighting a fire, it could be dangerous, it could be hard work. It strikes me as better than the monotony of being inside the four walls of a prison. That's my opinion.
My name is Debbie. I live in Surprise, and I have a family member who has done that. And it helps with their self-respect.
Yeah.
It gets them out of the prison mm-hmm. system. They're treated like individuals. And they actually feel good for what they're doing, and I don't think they necessarily care what they make.
Yeah.
I think it's more about getting out of the prison and having some self-respect.
You know, I love
it. I think there's something there.
When we you know, ask for your calls on the open mic line, because we get to hear some amazing things from our listeners. The fact that we had a guy who actually
did this.
And family members
know what you
who
speak.
Had done it. Yeah, we appreciate those calls on the open mic line. It's brought to you by Carol Royce, the leader in Arizona real estate. We'll get your home sold guaranteed, or she'll buy it for cash. Go to Carol. HasTheBuyers.com. And Josh Groban, special guest Idina Menzel, coming to the Talking Stick Arena on October 26th. Head on over to the rewards page at KTAR.com for your chance to win tickets and for complete info on the show.
So here's the deal. Catholic priests are being, well, accused of, and there appears to be a heck of a lot of evidence, of abusing over 1,000 children in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania alone. Oh, there's a lot of outrage. Rightfully so. The question is, who's accountable? How far up the chain does it go? We're going to talk about this abuse story coming out of Pennsylvania. And is it unique to Pennsylvania? Coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So the story started coming out yesterday afternoon, led by the Attorney General of the state of Pennsylvania, detailing a grand jury investigation. I want to say it was an 18-month investigation that looked into six Catholic dioceses in the state of Pennsylvania going back...
All eight.
Okay.
It was all eight.
All eight.
Mm-hmm.
Going back almost 70 years. And alleges that more than 300 priests abused more than 1,000 children over that period of time.
This was a bombshell yesterday. And it was a bombshell for a variety of different reasons, Bruce, because in this grand jury report that was released, the detail, the graphic, vile nature of what 300 priests over a period of 70 years in the state of Pennsylvania were accused of doing to young boys and girls is disgusting. As someone who I call myself a recovering Catholic, I went to church every Sunday. I had catechism. I had my first communion. I was confirmed.
You know of what you speak.
My parents were Eucharistic ministers. I mean, yes, I know of what I speak. And when you find out that the names of the priests that were involved in this report were released, mm-hmm. and the Pittsburgh diocese, for which I was a part
yeah.
of, had the most priests involved.
Like,
I had
almost 100 of them.
I went through those 100 names this morning to find out if any of my priests were on it. Didn't recognize any of them.
Well, good news.
Thankful there.
Sense. Yeah.
But you know what? A lot of people do recognize those names
yeah.
because there are so many. And the nature of the accusations that are being, you know, levied against these priests are vile and disgusting, but so is the systematic covering up of those abuses.
There were secret archives in every diocese where there was documentation of the abuse, but only the bishop in the diocese would have the key, and it remained secret for so long.
There was, I mean, like, people at the highest levels covering this up for decades. So they were able to identify 1,000 1,000 victims, but they're saying that there are probably thousands more whose records were either lost or were just too afraid to come forward.
Yeah, you can usually assume that anytime there is an investigation like this, you know, what did it take to get on their radar? There's other people that managed to fly underneath it. This is hardly the full extent. And I just keep coming back to, this is the state of Pennsylvania. This is not nationwide or worldwide. This is one state. And it's not even the most populous state.
Well, it is a state, though, that the Catholic religion is quite popular.
Sure.
With about 1 in 4 of the residents, you know, subscribing to that kind of faith. Again, my family being part of that. But when you start to get into the details, a lot of which, folks, we just can't even discuss here on the air. But I think it is important to give the breadth and the scope of what was being discussed in this report, so you have some sort of perspective and context.
5 sisters of the same family were raped by a priest in the diocese in Pennsylvania. And it appears as though from the narrative that the priest became friends with the family.
5 sisters. Yeah. They even had the youngest victim in this report, 1.5 years.
Oh, for God's sakes.
So I am a recovering Catholic. I wanted to hear from Catholics out there, other Catholics right here in the Valley. How do you react to it? Because when this whole story broke years and years and years ago, this is what got me out of the Catholic Church.
This was the breaking point for you.
By priests is what made me leave the church.
Okay.
So I wanted to hear from Catholics right now who are still in the church. What are your thoughts on this? Here's what you're saying across the valley.
Monique from Phoenix. As raised as a Catholic, I was molested as a little girl, not by a priest, but it was unfortunate because the church was my sanctuary. And to know so many kids how is disgusting.
Christine and Mesa, I'm having a really hard time swallowing all of this information and wondering how I can even step foot in a Catholic church again. It is my religion. I am a very faithful person, but I cannot continue to support an institution that time after time is being shown to protect child abusers. It's very upsetting to me, and I don't know how to move forward.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I come with, and I don't have the background in the church like you do, Pamela, that I can acknowledge that, you know, the few bad apples, or is it the responsibility of the church to dictate behavior for every single person? It's so large. There's 400,000 Catholic priests in the United States right now today. Are there some of them that might behave? I assume there would be. My bigger problem, And I hate to gloss over this. There are bad priests that molested children. They are horrible. They should be held account. Many of them are dead. Good. They're in a really warm place right now. But the Catholic Church, the institution itself, the hierarchy, the management, you know, bishops on up, cardinals, they appear to be complicit in this.
There's no appearance of complicity.
The church
there
itself,
is.
The management of the church, try to hide this for what can only be described as they were worried about how it made them look, worried about raising money, all these, you know, parishioners, for all the wrong reasons. They weren't there to protect children. They weren't there to protect the people that came to their church. They were to protect themselves and their business.
Nothing more vile than sexual abuse of a child.
Well,
and you claim to be a man of God?
Well, and even more so from people who are seen as a refuge, and you go to them for salvation or I mean, that makes it even
worse.
And
they prey on you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all of them. I'm not trying to lump them all together. But we got another call in the open mic line. Bruce, that kind of goes a little bit to what you were saying.
Hi, my name is Mona. I live in Phoenix. I am a practicing Catholic. It does break my heart. However, I look at the bigger picture of it all. They are human. They are men. There's good and bad in everything. I just try to, you know, look at the big picture, and I do go to Mass. I listen to my priest, but it's God that I'm listening to.
Yeah, okay.
So separate the priest from the religion?
You can't.
I'm saying I'm trying to understand
because
where she's going with that.
Like, that is the conduit.
Mm-hmm.
For the religion. I mean, like, that is your connection to the higher power, is that person. And that person is not a man of God in these instances. These 300 priests are not men of God. They're monsters. And the Catholic Church in Pennsylvania systematically protected monsters.
Yeah. I mean, it is the definition of a criminal conspiracy. It was a conspiracy to cover up crime.
And that's why the legislator in Pennsylvania needs to change the statute of limitations, because out of 300 priests, only two right now can be held criminally liable because of the statute of limitations having expired.
Yeah. Did you know that
that needs to change?
Pedophilia, child abuse, has a statute of limitations in the state of Pennsylvania. Not every state, but it does in the state of Pennsylvania, which is an, you know, insult to injury. Might be one of the reasons why I need to have your faith in humanity restored. Pamela says she's got that coming up for you next.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
We might like get ahead of ourselves restoring faith in humanity because...
Hey, we can always do it.
Yeah, you can't get nearly enough of it that today and tomorrow are special days here around KTAR. And I want to be very, very clear that this is not about us. This is about a very special place, a very unique facility right smack dab in the middle of Phoenix. We're talking about Phoenix Children's Hospital. Our annual Give-a-thon kicks off with Mac and Gatos at 2 o'clock today.
It kicks off today, Bruce, and I will be down there tomorrow during our show, a little bit before, a little bit after, and we are there to tell the stories of just the amazing stories of hope that happen every single day that are happening right now at Phoenix Children's Hospital. And you know, as a parent, Bruce, I've never had to take Riley to the hospital itself. But, you know, Phoenix Children's does so much more than just that hospital. They have a lot of the satellite campuses. And so I've used the satellite campus out in the East Valley a lot.
Well, I also think about Phoenix Children's Hospital is a lot more than just treating a child in need at that moment. That when you walk around Phoenix Children's Hospital, you find places like the Emily Center, a library. You can only imagine that parents or even a child that get a diagnosis or here's what the treatment is. What you don't know, you don't know. And the Emily Center is a library for parents and for kids so they can learn about a disease, a treatment, and get a lot more comfortable with things. I mean, a library inside a hospital to help patients and families deal with what they're going through. What an amazing resource.
There are so many amazing resources. And while I've been proud to be a part of the PCH Give-a-thon for many, many years here at KTAR, it's just been this year that I have seen this hospital work from the inside. As my cousin's son was diagnosed with leukemia and has spent a lot of time at Phoenix Children's Hospital. And going in and being with the family, and I was amazed at how much I had learned by spending as much time down there to help them navigate it.
Yeah.
And to see the programs that our listeners so generously donate to make a difference at that hospital, to see them actually in at work was truly amazing.
You know, and that's one of the things that I've learned just being around it now for the last 7-8 years, being around Phoenix Children's Hospital, is that, God forbid, your child is injured or comes down with something and you go there. Well, Phoenix Children's Hospital takes into account siblings. They take into account grandparents.
Yes, they do.
They take into account long-term care, short-term care. They take into account the fact that kids might be in the hospital during the school year. How are we going to deal with that? We got one cool school. You know, all of
these
things.
How do we deal with Christmas?
That have nothing to do with maybe a hypodermic needle or a pill or a procedure. All of these other things that go into dealing with the complete package, the person, the family in there. And our Give-a-thon for PCH kicks off today at 2 o'clock.
It kicks off today at 2 o'clock. This is, you know, the part of the program where we normally, you know, try to restore your faith in humanity. And we always do it at the end of every show, right? Yeah. Because we try to leave on a high note. But what this is so cool about with PCH is We're restoring your faith in humanity, or rather, you are restoring our faith in humanity for a day and a half. It's not just a couple of minutes at the end of the Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes show.
No.
It is something that, you know, KTAR and Arizona Sports 98.7, we work together. And as a community, you hear about Arizona and Phoenix in particular being very transient, right?
Everybody's from somewhere else.
Yeah,
they're all
new
to the valley.
And you see that a lot in sports, too, where, you know, everybody, their team is from where they came from, not, you know, here in the valley. But when you look at PCH, when you look at our Giveathon, it is a real sense of community, and it all happens because of you guys.
You're going to hear a phrase, become a champion of hope, a lot. We're looking for you to become a champion of hope. There are awesome opportunities for you to donate and to set up a giving plan and become a champion of hope. Hey, the types of things you're going to be fundamentally changing in a child and a family's life inside that hospital is amazing. And it really is. It does. It's a sense of you're giving back to a community that's given something to you. You and I talk about all the time. We love living here.
Yeah, we choose to live here.
Yeah. I'm not forced to stay. You know, I like living here. And we should be looking for those opportunities. Hopefully, and I'd like to encourage each and every one of you, here is an opportunity. If you can give in other ways, don't get me wrong, but if you're looking for a way to give, wow, this is a great way. Starting at 2 o'clock today, you can become a champion of hope and help the kids at PCH. Sound like a deal?
Sounds like a great deal.
Cool. Mac and Gatels will kick it off for us again in just a few hours, and then tomorrow, Pamela and I, along with our friends from Arizona Sports, will be
the whole gang is going to be down there, folks.
Yes, it is. It is a group effort, and thanks to so many of the people that make all that happen, as well as the people that make it happen on the other side of the double pane bulletproof glass over there. We've got DJ Tommy Two-Tone, super producer Stevie Z, and of course Bob McClay. Don't worry, still delivering the news, traffic, weather information, everything you need to know.